Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is Attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.
You're locked on the V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
I got a question. So that's Annie Lennox, right? That's Annie Lennox from
The Eurythmics.
Yes, The Eurythmics. Thank you. And that's called sampling, right? Isn't that what you do when you take something from another song and then you? You smoosh it around. I thought that was called sampling.
No, sampling is like in a lot of hip hop beats, where they like they'll take like a like a little hook.
What's the difference?
Like
what they did there? They took a little segment of that song
because like this is the full song just remixed. Like
a remix. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
All right. So here's the question. Either case, maybe they're not the same because maybe if we talk sampling, you'll take a you'll hear a song and it's done by a different artist who had nothing to do with the sampling of the first artist. Do they have to pay that first guy some of the money for the song? Do they pay for the rights to sample it, or do they? How does that work exactly? Like who turned this remix of this song of hers? Did the Eurythmics turn this out? Is it was it done by somebody else and then they get permission from the Eurythmics and pay them a royalty? Or like you can't just take other people's work and do what the hell you want with it. So there's got to be some protocol that you follow for that, and I don't know what it is.
That was a big thing. Like when sampling was utilized in hip hop early, I know
they weren't paying people.
Well, no, that was a big debate on whether or not I mean, the beats that were used were really cool and kind of original, but they definitely did utilize, a sample from
other people's material.
There's a great website, by the way, called I think it's called Who Sampled Who, and you go and you just type in wow, that's a really cool song, an old school hip hop song. You type it in, and then it'll tell you what that sample is from. Well, that's actually from the Monkees 1967 album, and it's just, and then you can go back and hear the whole song. It's actually kind of cool. But
don't they? But
I
that's
don't.
The question. So
I
do they
don't
have to
know.
Pay that label or the Monkees or whoever they sampled?
I don't know
from?
What the rules are, but I do know that was a big controversy because there was a special about it. I don't remember what the outcome was.
Seems like you would owe me something. I mean, it's my original work, I don't care how short it is, and it becomes instrumental for your work, then we're partners, or at least you owe me something. That's how I would do that. But again, I'm not in the music business.
Well, see, I don't know who remade this one.
See, that's the other thing. This is, as you said, not a sample. This is the actual song, just remixed.
Yeah, this is a remix.
So now,
it was for Atomic Blonde. But it's the search titles.
So now
titles.
Do they pay them again?
The search titles are Eurythmics, Annie Lennox, Dave Stewart, Here Comes the Rain Again, remastered. So I don't know if this was from, an actual Eurythmics album that they just, remastered. Like, they did that with some Elvis songs one time. I don't know, but I don't know who did this. I'll see if I can track down the name. Oh, wait a minute. You know what? I'll use the good old, what's that app called? Shazam. All right, I got to pump it for a sec. Hang tight.
Go ahead.
Huh. Okay. By the way, we're probably going to have to pay the Eurythmics royalties here in a second. But it's Sweet Dreams are made of these, the Steve Angello bootleg. But it is technically by the Eurythmics. That's what Shazam's saying.
So they should get money.
Well, maybe they made it, is what I'm saying.
Oh, you mean they hired this other group of people to do it?
Yeah, Steve Angello. Yeah. And he made
it. So, you take my song and mess with it.
Yeah, maybe.
And then, okay. Well, then you still get money. I mean, you'd have to hire that guy, but then you'd get money too. So, I think they deserve money.
I don't disagree. I don't know what the rules are on that. For the rest of the show, I'm going to play remixes, though.
Speaking of money, this Thanksgiving, be thankful for free bets, because that's right. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, has a Turkey Day no-brainer you don't want to miss. New customers can bet just one single solitary dollar on any Thanksgiving NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. Got to feel good about that, that there's not going to be a scoreless tie in these games. All DraftKings customers can also get in on a new same-game parlay offer that's sweeter than grandma's pumpkin pie. For the Thanksgiving games, all customers get a risk-free bet up to $25 if your same game parlay doesn't win. Wow, they're really in the holiday spirit. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code WHBE. Bet just $1 on any Thanksgiving NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. That's promo code WHBE this Thanksgiving at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the National Football League. Must be 21 or older, Indiana only, new customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
Can we do a Bet Rivers Twitter poll?
I won my own today. When is your as close to it as possible, because you can't do every possible date. When is as close to as possible to your date for when you put the shorts away for good till next spring? Is it October 15th, November 15th, December 15th, or I never put them away?
I'd probably go never, just because.
Really?
Just because you never know, especially with the Ohio Valley. And I really, really, really hate doing laundry. So there's a day that if it's, you know, if it hits 40, I might just layer. The most versatile range of comfortable clothing is to wear a light hoodie and shorts. You can play around with about 30 degrees either way, because you're comfortable, at least I am, and whether up to like, if you get me 40 and I have a hoodie and shorts, I'm okay. If you go all the way up to like 65, 70, I might be able to get away with it, depending on how humid it is and how heavy the hoodie is. And I'm comfortable. So hoodie and shorts, that's the best combo, at least in terms of it has the longest range of comfort.
I think October 15th might be a little early, but I think for me it's probably November 15th. I'm not wearing shorts now. I mean, maybe if I know I'm going to spend the whole day in the house.
That's really what I'm saying. Fair. Yeah, so that's...
No, but I mean, if you're going out, how about going out, okay?
But there's days that, you know, it's crappy outside. And, you know, maybe if you have, like, DFH or something, like, you know, you have a very powerful Mitsubishi mini split. Look at me being a company man.
All right, so
you know, it gets really hot. So.
When's your drop dead date for wearing shorts out? October 15th,
there
November
you go.
15th,
yeah.
December 15th, or no, never. I'm always ready to break out the shorts.
All right, put that up.
I would say November 15th, because I wore shorts out the end of October. But I think November 15th, they're pretty well locked away now. I've got the long trousers out, as it were. So I still wear polo shirts, though. I'll still wear short sleeve polos, even in this kind of weather. Because if I'm going outside, I'm putting a winter coat over it. Although, how fair is that, by the way? This could be a poll that I would win handily, but it's getting to be the holidays, and I don't want to piss off the missus. Is it fair that your significant other, who has, and Nick can vouch for this, what would you say, 10 winter coats at her disposal in the entranceway? There's hangers on the wall, and I guess whatever mood strikes her. So they're hanging there.
Wait. Is this Janet or?
No, Darlene.
Oh. Because Janet has a lot of coats too, but yeah.
All right, well, she's got like, all right, so I have one winter coat. I'm like a lot of guys. I got one winter coat. When she goes to walk the dog, she puts a sweatshirt underneath it, and her coats don't fit over all of her layers. So she takes my coat. So she takes my coat, and of course, every once in a while, you have an oopsie, and so there's she got poo all over my coat. So now, for 2 days, I've had no coat. I have no coat to wear.
It's like that Dane Cook bit. Someone crapped on the coats.
I said, why don't you wear your own coat? I can't get that over all my layers. Well, that's my only coat. So now I have no coat. So I'll wash it for you. So now she did that. She's got it washed. And she said, did you see how clean your coat? Did you smell your coat, how clean it is? And I was like, that's not changing the fact that I had no coat. I had no coat for 2 days, and you know, and I had to either face the possibility of not going out at all, or you know, tempting fate, which I don't like doing. So, do you think it's fair that you know? I understand her point, but then I said, why don't you let me buy you a men's coat? I'll buy you one that you keep just in the doorway, so when you go and walk the dog, you can put it on whatever you want. No, don't do that. Well, why not? You know what? Why you take my coat? That's a bunch of crap, quite literally.
Yeah, I'm sorry that happened. That is,
man,
you know,
as gross as I am,
I really, yeah, I get very icky about poo.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I would be very, very upset. To quote the league, that would be like forever unclean. I would always feel like my jacket was a little
dirty.
But
it's clean. It is definitely clean. I mean, it wasn't like the dog pooed on it. It was a little bit on.
Yeah, but how did she? But did she drop it? Like, I mean,
no, trying to pick it up. I guess I don't know. Who knows? Ask her.
I don't know.
Think the listeners eating lunch want to play by play about it. It happens. It's never happened to you. Well, you just let your dog go in the back and don't pick it up. You're right. So you don't ever have to deal with that.
It's free fertilizer.
Ugh.
By the way,
we live in a condo complex. If you live in an apartment or a condo complex or even in any kind of development and you don't poop or scoop your dog, you are awful.
Oh, my God. That reminds me. I forgot to pick up Simon when I was over there for dinner last time. He pooped in your neighbor's yard and we were leaving. We were in the process of leaving and I completely forgot to pick it up. So
nice.
Your neighbors might have stepped in Simon's crap. And I'm very on walks. I'm very, you know, public places. I'm very pro pick up your poop. And if for whatever reason, maybe you've run out of bags, I bury it.
Oh, we have plenty of bags.
Well, you know, there's been times when, you know, I bring two bags.
You got plenty of bags.
I bring
bags.
A bag. Maybe, you know, I need it. Was a
I never walk.
Or maybe it was a three poop job. And I'm bagless, Dad. I am bagless.
I don't
so
walk out.
So what do
enough.
I do? What do I do? I never leave it in the open. I grab a bunch of grass or a bunch of leaves.
That's
I
even
bury
worse.
It. I bury it, and then I do the step test on it. Because if anyone's going to get poop on their shoe, it's going to be me. So I stomp around on it, and after I do a sea walk on my covered poop, and there's no poop to be seen, I know I've done a good job burying. There's very few things I would say I'm a good citizen about that I would brag about. My taking care of poop. You know,
I don't
not,
see
not,
how you
not
cover it and
not,
make it so it wouldn't splash up on the sides and get on your shoes.
Did you pick out
like brick and mortar and
you
build
have
a little
to
building
aggressively
under?
Cover it. Like, I mean, there's been times when I've taken chunks of grass so much so that I wonder if people are more upset that I'm tearing up their lawn than about picking up the poop. But usually it's community grass. It's not like I'm in. Like,
I don't go out without.
I usually
the problem
try to
is,
keep, I try to keep my dogs off other
don't
people's
go,
yards.
Don't never
anyway.
Go out without four bags. You need four bags because he's capable of going for a three bagger. I've never seen a little guy. He can just let it go. He's a little poop machine, so he can go for three. And I always have a spare in case one of them rips or something. You always have an extra. So it's not like they're heavy. You jam two in each pocket and off you go. And then you're not ever faced with that situation. So, I don't know. That was it, almost as disappointing as peeing in the sink. That's
oh my God, I did that twice and really. Well, no, honestly, I'm mad at myself because truly I pride myself on being a good pooper picker upper and I forgot about Simon's poop the other day. And it was right in your neighbor's yard and they don't deserve to step in that.
And we're so adamant about everybody needs to pick up after themselves and somebody's going to say, see, they're hypocrites.
Yeah, no, that's
do as,
that's
do
great.
As I say, not as I do.
I'm alienating you guys in your new neighborhood. Yeah. That's fantastic. 437-9680 UPS Jobs text line.
Let's get to those texts. Yeah, what do you got for me?
I always pick up my dog's poop except when I fake pick it up, Ike.
It's not nice, Ike. Don't do that.
I'd be lying if I said that didn't happen once or twice when I was just completely SOL. Puck dropped, you know, a big one, and I didn't have bags.
All right, how about some basketball text
no,
or something?
And there was nothing about. I could do to cover it up, so I tried to, you know, pretend like I was doing something.
Okay.
I've gone back and picked it up, though. Like, I've gone all the way back home and then driven out.
I think we've exhausted this topic. How about now some responses to the football or the basketball?
437-968 UPS Jobs text line. Players don't need to announce they've bought in. They just need to show it on the floor. That same texter wants to know what your coat size is. He is wondering if you're angling to just get a new coat.
It is Christmas. I should lobby for a second one. Actually, now this is way more information to our life's business than you need to know. We have we're that family that has way too much stuff. Nick will vouch for that. We spent a lot of our early years of marriage under one adage: if one is good, six are better. So we there's stuff everywhere, and there's our house has an attached garage, and there's a little door. It's not even a hallway. It's just a little, maybe 3 foot long thing that links the garage. You know, the walk and the door to enter the garage, walking into the hallway that comes from the front door to the living room. So that's how you'd go in. And all my coats when we moved in are there on a rack in the garage. Well, because we have too much stuff, the lovely and talented Darlene, there's four hooks that are in that hallway as well, and then the stuff in the garage. So I put all my coats in the garage, thinking if I needed a coat, I would just open the door and take one off the hanger and put it on. But there's now, well, I don't know, 7 tons worth of crap in that hallway, so I can't get into the garage that way. So the only other way to get into the garage would be to go outside and open the garage door and then walk in from the front, which defeats the purpose because then you're going outside in the cold. So I have that one coat. I cling to that one coat. Meanwhile, the four hooks that she has up there are covered in probably 2 or 3 of her coats each. So she has about 8 to 10 there.
That's my mommy.
I have none. Yeah. So that's you know, so no, I don't really need a new coat if I'm going to be candid. And I do, by the way, every year, not to make it sound like I'm, you know, pat me on the back, what a guy, but maybe to plant the seed, maybe you'd want to do it. Every year I take a brand new winter coat for a man and a brand new winter coat for a woman to one of the charities that helps the homeless. Because I remember one winter here, oh, I don't know, 10 years ago, I was driving downtown, and it was one of those bitter, bitter cold Louisville winter days. The wind's coming off the river, and this poor homeless guy is walking, and he's got, I don't even think he had a windbreaker on. I mean, it was as if you wanted to torture somebody, you would have made them go walk up and down the block, you know, with just a T-shirt on. And I couldn't get that image out of my head, so... you know, that I just had to do something for people. You don't have no, you know, you're hot, it's uncomfortable, but if you got water, you can find a way to survive it. But I mean, you literally can freeze to death and get pneumonia and everything else going on. So I hate being cold. I can deal with being hot. I hate being cold. So, you know, it's nice to make. And I know they do that fundraiser every year, don't they? Or at least they used to. I don't know. Maybe COVID made it stop. But they used to do a winter coat thing.
Yeah, like a coat drive.
I think they did it at Bowman Field or something. I thought that was a nice event. So yeah, I thought I'd mention that.
Anyway. Yeah, absolutely. And just remember, I think we're doing Cram the Van again this year. So
the players don't have to verbalize it. I'm not suggesting they do. That wasn't my point. My point was not that I don't like them saying that. My point was if they feel that comfortable, that's their observation, that guys are not completely buying into what they're trying to do, and they're 6-5 games into the season plus 2 exhibition games, or 4 games into the season, I guess, that's troubling. So, you know, you should have some idea at least about what you're trying to do. You may not do it well, but you should have some idea what you're trying to do. And, you know, it's funny, the little things you notice. Like Sam, they took him to the lane yesterday, and the guy pump-faked him, and he just played it right out of the way they've taught it here, which is you come out and close out and do the chop-chop thing with your feet, and then when he fakes, your hands go straight up, and you don't jump. And the kid had no choice but to throw it back out. And I was like, that's why you practice. And, you know, there's a bunch of little things like that they're not doing as well as they need to yet. But they're capable, I think. We'll see. All right, what else you got?
This one just came in. Jalen Withers was supposed to be awesome at the 4. Seems to be standing around on the perimeter and has no desire to rebound. How much do you play him if this is all he brings?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I don't like to single guys out, but I agree with you. He was so inactive this last game. I don't know what's going through his mind that he's upset about something. You know, he wants to show he's a jump shooter, which, you know, he can make them on occasion, but why would you play to your 4th or 5th best option? Go do what you do well. And you're right. He has not, they're not getting a lot out of him. And I don't know if Malik's mobility is bothered by all the injuries he's had, but he doesn't seem to be moving very well. So I agree with you. I mean, I don't know. You know, I'm not at practice every day, and that's a big, big caveat, a huge caveat. When people say, well, who would you start and who would you play? Well, I need to see the guys who earned it. Like when he played Wheeler the other day, he said, because the kid was was killing himself in practice. Well, you got to give him a little sugar. So, and then he went and rewarded them. He played very well. So I don't know what's going on in practice, but what the best combination is. I mean, I was not that I was down on Dre, but he didn't do a whole lot in the first half, and Sam came and was lighting it up, and then all of a sudden the second half Dre went out of his mind. I mean, he was fantastic. So I don't know what the answer is, other than maybe certain guys in certain combinations. A guy wrote me and said, you know, why isn't Faulkner playing more? And it's one of those things, like I said earlier, it's a zero-sum game. You're playing this game, Cross is out. Okay, so you can't put a guy at the wing who's just a deep shooter. Your only real consistent deep shooting threat right now, consistent, there are other guys that can make them, is Locke. And so you got to play Locke, and nobody else on the team could guard Davis. I don't care what you say. He scored two baskets against West, and the rest of them were when West was out of the game or when he wasn't the primary defender. They had to leave him in, because the only way that Detroit was going to win is if he had a huge game. And he came close. He got in the upper 20s, but you know, they didn't let him get in the 30s and have one of those kinds of games. And if you watch how they run their offense, man, everything goes through him. West was killing himself to keep him from getting the basketball. So you can't take either of those guys out for long stretches. And unless you're going to play Faulkner and play all three guards, then you're going to be really tiny across the back. And then you're going to have, you know, what are you going to do? I guess you could play Sam. That's a tiny lineup. If you play those three and then Sam at four and, you know, Malik or whoever at five, I don't really want to play that small. So there just was not a good opportunity for him to get a lot of minutes the other day. But, I mean, if somebody wrote, he's as good a defender as West is, I think he can be a good defender. I don't think he's as good a defender as West is, because I don't think anybody's as good a defender as West is. He's fundamentally spectacular. And you watch, you know, it's ironic that he's playing for Chris, because they don't chart deflections. If he played for Rick, he'd have retired the deflection trophy already. Every game comes out, he seems like he's got 15 deflections. I mean, sometimes more deflections right off the primary defender's dribble. That's hard to do at this level. You don't get your hand in there very often like that. He knocks it away from guys. He's a special defender. Really, really good. What else you got?
This was Coach McGee. Sorry, post game he addressed why he limited Cross and Mason Faulkner.
Cross is easy because Cross was sick as a dog.
Yeah, but. So I've just highlighted the Mason Faulkner. It was very, very short, but maybe worth a sentence or two.
As far as Mason, I need more from Mason. You know, he had a rough go at it in the first half. I didn't like his response, so I didn't play him in the second half.
Oh, and he didn't talk about Cross. Okay, well, Cross, we told you.
He talked about that in the first half of that clip, but like you said, we already covered that, so I just highlighted the Mason Faulkner part.
Yeah, no, he just, I mean, again, I'm not at practice, and so, you know, he's as long as Faulkner doesn't hang his head, because he was important a couple of games ago, and that's the way this team's going to be. But this was not a place where you could take West out, really. So, but he's going to be an important part of this team. There's no question. He's a very good player. So. We'll see how it plays out for him.
437-968 UPS Jobs text line. Just might as well finish this whole text, because that same guy asked about Malik. Malik used to be praised for his defense. Is he just out of shape and foot slow from playing so little the last 2 years? What's going on?
I'm wondering the exact same thing, my good friend. I don't know. I watched to see if he's limping. He doesn't have a noticeable limp. But, I mean, every time he and Jalen get caught on a switch, the other team goes to a spread and they just take him. I mean, it's like, just go. I mean, and that has to be something. That can't possibly be coincidence. That's got to be part of team scouting reports now. And they've got to figure, you're right, that was one of the great things he could do. He could switch on anybody. You could switch 1 through 5 with him, because he could go play point guards. Now he can't guard anybody. And he doesn't get around the basket. And remember, he had a whole bunch of those moves last year. He'd jump and make the little jump hook with the left hand, with the right hand. And it's you don't forget how to play. It's got to be – that injury was really serious. And I don't know if he's still getting himself back in condition or he just doesn't feel comfortable yet. You know, he turned his ankle a little bit last game. We saw him hobble off the court a bit. But then, you know, he came back and he's playing this game. I don't know. Maybe it's sadly become a chronic situation. Now, I had a kid at Bellarmine that I coached who was a very good player, but I mean, he had injured his ankle so many times that the tendons were so stretched out that almost any, I mean, like once a week, he would make a cut or something and the ankle would just give and it would be painful and kill him, and he'd have to come out and play a little bit, and then they'd, you know, calm it down a little bit, and he could go back and play. But and they taped it up. It wasn't like they ignored it. But my point is, it was weakened from all of the injuries he had on it. And I don't know. Maybe Malik's facing the same thing. I'm certainly not a doctor. I don't know. But, yeah, they need more from him. They need more from him and Jalen. There's no question about that. Any more texts? Are we going to a break?
Or oh, no, like we're lousy with text. Our buddy Illini Ike said this: I'm a big proponent of watching how a player acts and supports their teammates when not in the game.
Right.
The North Carolina women's soccer team videotapes the bench during a game, for example. For a long time, they were like the UConn women's basketball of NCAA women's soccer. Great insight as usual, Bob.
Oh, thank you. But, yeah, that's – oh, I'm sure teams are doing that now. They got nine – I mean, you look at all these guys they got around the program. They all have to do something. I'm amazed how big the coaching staffs and the staffs are. They've got, like, I don't know, nine managers and six assistants. I mean, I still remember the Knicks winning the NBA championship with Red Holtzman and Danny Whalen, who was the trainer on the bench. Those are the only two guys. That was it. Danny Whalen had this bright orange shirt that said Knicks across the front. That was his garb. White pants and a bright orange shirt. He looked like a creamsicle. And he was the trainer. And then they won their championship in 73. They really splurged at that point. They hired an assistant. They got one assistant to be on the bench. Yeah, it was pretty exciting. So it's craziness. But, yeah, so they got to do something. So I wouldn't be surprised. But, I call that the game in the cracks. And that's what – but, you know, when you watch TV, they don't have the luxury of showing you that. They got to focus on the primary action in the game, which usually involves the ball, the basketball, or who's actually on the court. But when you're that's what you miss when you do the game at home from the monitor, is you don't get to see the game in the cracks. And I agree with you, Aline. It is that's where you get a lot of your answers. You see – like, you know, you see guys in the pregame warm-ups. You see their expressions. You see, I mean, they are the ones that are not, they're upset about, I guess, where they're, you know, the game plan for that day. They're not really involved in it, and they know that. And you watch when guys come out, how they react to players. Do they give them a high five? I mean, there was a game the other day. I saw a guy come out, and the guy come in, and the guy coming out of the game went to high five him, and the guy coming in hadn't been playing that much, and he ignored him. And I used to call them IFUs, indirect blank U's. we used to talk about them on our team because I said that, you know, don't be doing that. I mean, I know what they are, and they're ones where if you bring it up, the kid says, "Oh, I didn't do anything." You know, you come into the game, and the guy you're coming out of the game, and the guy coming in. A lot of teams used to do this. He flips you a towel, and so you don't catch it. You just let it sail over your shoulder and go on the court. You know, that's an IFU. Or when you come out of the game, you know, instead of going to sit up toward the head of the bench, you go sit, you know, past the last player and past the trainer, past the doctor. You're practically in the hallway. You go sit down there. That's an – everybody can see that. That's an IFU. You know, making crazy gestures on the bench that, you know, that show how displeased you are about stuff. That's – all those things are IFUs. And you don't see them on TV very often. You can't but I agree. They're very telling. You see guys who have the great attitude. I see when the coach is talking, if they come out, are they looking at the guy or are they looking away? In the timeout, if they're not in the game, are they looking into the huddle and trying to see what's going on, or are they looking up in the stands and, you know, watching the see if the promotion, if who's catching a T-shirt, stuff like that. You know, those are all signs, and I agree. And, you know, I'm sure there are teams that tape it. They probably do. Body language, for lack of a better term, is a big deal. It's a big indicator of guys. I mean, you could see it last year on the guys. You saw Gahan. I mean, he had one foot out the door for most of the season last year. He was ready to go. And so, you know, you can tell a lot from that. So, and now with the portal, my God, have the guys play the whole time with one foot out the door. I mean, everybody's playing with me. It's just everybody's, before they start, they ask you, so where's the portal? Which door is the portal here today? I want to make sure I know.
Asking for a friend.
I just want to know. It's the halftime in case I got to go. You know, it is what it is. But they have some talent. They have some talent. But they've got to do a whole bunch of things better. No question about that. 437-9680 if you want to text us. Is that the UPS Jobs text line? Is that
what we're doing? Globe. Thank you, Jack. Mama Grossman made some pasta bolognese.
Oh, wow.
He came in and spoon fed me some. So shout out to
what's the deal? Don't we get
Grossman's good stuff?
Don't you get food on Monday from somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you guys get food on Monday from somebody at the station?
Not yet. We're, you know, our friends Mill and Tony's came back on. They're a Maben sponsor now. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe we can get them to come on.
They're a Maben sponsor.
Yeah, you jelly. You're jelly. You're a little jelly.
Well, what part of Italy is he from?
The southern part. I don't know. 437-9680 UPS jobs text line. Must admit losing games by 35 and 45 points is a downer. Also, off-court miscues continuing during the summer. Wonder if the basketball coach is focused enough on the coaching the team. Also, another texter said that.
Wait a minute. Why would you not give me a chance to respond? I thought that was the whole point.
Well, no, but because another texter said that way out, like I think off the Snyder, he said, there's a house that has a big Fire Chris Mack banner. I don't know how.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I know. I don't know how he's getting flack. I don't know. I feel like that's a little harsh.
That's ridiculous. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, I really
blaming
don't
him for
that.
The suspension. But I mean, from all accounts, I mean, the suspension was over.
That wasn't the brightest thing. But I mean, if anything, most people I think say, well, the punishment might have exceeded the crime a little bit. It might have been a little too harsh.
Exactly.
So other than that, what would you say should be fired? I mean, he's been here 3 years. They made the tournament the first year. They easily would have made it the second year, and if the season had gone on as planned, and last year they didn't, and last year it fell apart on them. I agree with that, but the this is his fourth year, right? And
last year it fell apart on him, and they literally were as close as you could be. I mean, they were the 69th, not nice, yeah. I guess, team, and you know, ranked.
That's
so
right, and so I mean, I'm sorry, it was David Padgett did as good a job as you could do to hold it together, but it was held together with bubble gum and with, you know, scotch tape, and there's a lot of work that needed to be done to get it back on track, and so the way the whole changing your staff thing was done was really, that was the sledgehammer school of administration. I agree with that. That was not, but if you want to fire him for that, that seems a little harsh. And if not that, then I think you're overreacting. I'm sorry. I don't know what I can tell you. I mean, I know that that's a source of pride around fans, is to make it sound like your program, well, you don't understand. This is Louisville, or this is Kentucky, or this is, and then say something that somehow qualifies an illogical statement after that to make sense. And I never bought into that. Yes, it is a place that the standards are high and you got high expectations, and you know, I agree with that, but you got to give a guy an opportunity to see where the hell it's going to go, and I just don't think that's been the case right now. I mean, who in their right mind would look at the first 3 years and say, well, that's a fair test? They lost the whole crunch of COVID, has wreaked havoc with everybody. I mean, did you not look at the records last year? I mean, do you think all of a sudden that Mike Krzyzewski and Tom Izzo and John Calipari got stupid? I mean, their programs were. I mean, Kentucky was 9-16, Duke was 13-11, and Michigan State was 15-13, and that was only because they went crazy at the end of the year. They got, you know, Izzo finally was able to work with his team for a stretch, and they won a whole bunch of games late. They beat three top five teams, and they got themselves in. But those are, I mean, Kansas was 21-9, and was the best of the four of them. You can't write that off. You can't just say, well, you know, it meant nothing. Of course it did. And so that's just a foolish way to look at it. Does the program have to get better? Sure. Does this team have to get better? Yes. I mean, Chris Mack would be here. He'd be the first one to tell you that. Mike Pegues would tell you that. There's no doubt. But, I mean, to just lose your mind, I don't understand the logic. Same way I don't understand the Kentucky football fans' frustration at this team. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, I really don't understand where all of a sudden having a chance with two games to go to have a 10-win season is no good. I mean, I just don't understand that completely. So what happens is you and I get it. If you play, you know, 5 years or something, and it's a rivalry that you're supposed to be on an equal footing with them, and you've got good teams, and you just can't seem to get a win against them, your team is quote unquote, as good as theirs is, okay, then you can say, well, that carries an extra weight, that game. But I understand how important it is to the fans here that, you know, it's very important. You go to work Monday, you can go to the water cooler, you can talk smack to the annoying guy from accounting or the jackass from sales or something. But beyond that, if you're going to be logical and rational, as an athletic director should be or an administrator, you can't really do that. You got to look at things in the course of the timeline. And for Louisville basketball, it was a program that was in a mess, and unfortunately there's still a mess going on. And did he contribute to it a little bit? Yeah, probably did with the firing. Okay, granted that. But that in and of itself is would not be fire-worthy, I don't think. At least most people don't think so. Maybe you do, and if you do, then okay, that's a different story. But, you know, in terms of getting the team to go well, they've got good players in here now. They're playing a more attractive style. They certainly have a tougher schedule. I mean, I'll be honest, some of the games, you know, the people are mad because they're not blowing these teams out in the early season. Take a look at some of the teams that they used to play in these games. They were painful to do. I mean, you know, the Institute of No Thumbs, Our Lady of Perpetual Help. I mean, you're going to win those games by 50, and that's fine. And you know, and I get it. Rick is in the Hall of Fame, so he's got a method to his madness. But you play all those games, you win by 40, and then you tell your team you're not happy with them. That was his modus operandi. Every year we went through it. Every year they went through, they played, you know, these teams. First he would tell you how good they are, then they'd beat them by 50, and then he would tell you that, you know, we were terrible today, and if they don't understand it, they can all get to hell out of here, and you know, we'll get guys in here who do. And you know, Scott Padgett told me he got thrown off the team every year at Kentucky. Every year he would be thrown off the team and then he'd come back and play. And so that's that. He works, he thrives on chaos. There are guys that do. I don't think Chris works his program that way, and I don't think he's structured that way. And so he's trying to work through what a tough environment was, and then he's trying to get him back to the elite. And I don't think they're. I certainly. And that's all I'm saying. I mean, Xavier's a nice program, but, you know, would they get a number one seed one year? That's not a traditional thing at Xavier, and that's a guy who built a hell of a program there. So give him time here. Now, as for football for Kentucky, I don't get that at all. When all of a sudden did 8-9 and win seasons become unacceptable? I don't get that. I really don't. I mean, wow. I don't know whether it's because coaches sometimes get mentioned for other jobs. Like, I know the Louisville program here. Guy texted me the other day and said, well, I hope they get buried by Kentucky and then they fire Satterfield. They want everybody fired. That's the new thing. Is just fire everybody. Bad half, fire them. Fire them at halftime. Get them out. I mean, I don't understand that, but I think some of it is the oafish way that he handled, you know, talking about leaving with that, with the what was it? Well, I didn't remember what job it was. South Carolina, is that what it was? The South Carolina job?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I get that if you don't like that, and you'll never forgive them for that, okay, but I'm saying the job they're doing, they were close. They win this game, which is not out of the realm of possibility, and win a bowl game. They're getting an 8-win season out of this quote-unquote disaster everybody's talking about, and they did. They're two plays away from a couple of other wins. I mean, so that's what you look at. I mean, my impression is you fire a guy when you think it's hopeless. Like, what the, I mean, you know, we got to start all over again. And I always say sometimes I laugh at that because you'll take a guy who, like, you know, it was just a mess, and then they bring a new guy in. They give him a whole bunch of stuff that they didn't give the old guy because now they got a vested interest that this guy has to do better. And then he goes from, like, 2 wins to 5, and everybody says, wow, look at that, 150% improvement, when if the old guy had done that, you'd be ready to kill him again. So I always say, sometimes, I mean, I remember there were people that were disgruntled at Stoops. I remember doing the radio show in the preseason. Why is everybody so absolutely disinterested in Kentucky football? We had people texting us, oh, the same, oh, we'll be mediocre and this, that, and they stayed with them, and the next thing you know, they got a 10-win season, and now they're getting dismayed at 8-9-win seasons. So, I mean, I don't completely grasp that. We're getting to a break, and then we're coming back. Thanks for being with us. It's ESPN 680 1057.
You're locked on the V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
We heard earlier from Scott Satterfield. Now we turn our attention to basketball, and you'll hear from Coach Pegues in a moment. But let's go first to the podium and check in with Malik Williams.
Like, we're where any team is, and you know,
in early November or late November at this point, kind of. But, you know, just trying to find the flow, trying to find an identity, trying to find what's going to make us us and, you know, make us the best team possible to reach the potential that we want to reach this year. But, you know, the biggest thing for us is just being consistent and, you know, having consistency in all areas. But, you know, taking the trip to the Bahamas is big for us. And just to step up in competition, you know, not playing in the Yum for the first time this year and, you know, it being different in, I believe, a ballroom type of setting. So, you know, it's going to be different. But if we come to play Louisville basketball, I believe we'll come back with two wins.
Like, when you talk about that identity and you're trying to find it, what should it be? What should this what kind of team should this team be?
You know, I think every team to reach the, you know, the NCAA tournament, the Final Four, and, you know, win the whole thing has to have a some type of defensive identity. So I think that we have to find that, and, you know, we have to do it on the defensive end. But also with this team, just the pace of play that we want to play with, just getting out in transition and doing all those little things and having, I'm sure you guys heard Ross mention it, but just that metronome of just keeping the offense humping and keeping it moving. But just those two things, playing with pace and, you know, playing defense.
Malik, what do you think it is that prevents you guys from recognizing what your defensive identity is? Is it execution? Is it mindset? Is it toughness? What do you believe that could be?
I think it's all three. You know, we got to execute it at the end of the day. They always give us the plan of what we got to do, but, you know, sometimes we just don't do the job, and then it is the toughness factor, because it may not be physical toughness, but it's mental toughness to be able to remember all of those things and, you know, do the job repeatedly over and over and do a good job with it. But also it's just how we got to play. Like, you got to know that that's what we do. So
Mike has mentioned after several games that you guys have to be better on the glass. Is that sending more guys to the glass, or the guys who are inside players just being a little bit more aggressive and physical? How do you guys achieve that?
I think it's both. And I think it does start with, you know, the 3 through 5. Those players are always going to be around. You know, it's a different kind of feel for the guards on the offensive end. So, you know, for us, the 3 through 5 really got to be aggressive on both ends of the floor. But, you know, when it comes to defensive rebound, it got to be a 5-man job. And we all got to be together and connected when we're trying to get those boards.
Malik, I'm sure you guys say this is a business trip, but let's be honest, it's still the Bahamas. There will be a little bit of downtime. You know, how nice is it? I mean, you guys have been going at it probably since, what, June? I mean, how nice is it to maybe go and just kind of be in a place like that? How good will that be for you guys mentally?
It's great. You know, I've never been to Bahamas. I've never been out of the country. So, you know, it's a nice experience for me. Just getting to use the whole passport deal and things like that. So it's going to be great. But like you said, it is a business trip, and we want to enjoy it as much as possible, you know, especially for the younger guys and, you know, the last year guys. So all the way across, we got to enjoy the experience, you know, hopefully get some better weather than what's been going on here. But at the end of the day, you know, whenever those game times comes, we got to be ready to go. When we're shooting around, when we're in practice, it's got to be all business. But at the end of the day, just enjoy the moment and enjoy where we are.
You kind of glad it got cold? Like, don't you kind of want it to be cold when you're leaving for the Bahamas? Aren't you kind of glad it's like a little bit cold so you get to be like, yeah, I'm getting out of this?
Right, for sure, yeah. It's been getting really cold. You know, I'm used to it, though. Just being an Indiana kid, I've always experienced those cold times. So it's nothing different for me, but it's been real cold early.
Outside of basketball, what is the one thing that you look forward to? Apparently, they've got a pretty nice water park.
You know, I actually just heard about that, but you know, I'm a big water park guy, so I do look forward to that. But, you know, just seeing it, never being out of the country is just like an experience that you'll never forget. Like, so I just want to take it all in and sightsee and see as much things and, you know, experience as much things as I can. But at the end of the day, get those two wins, that'll make the trip amazing.
How much do you know about Mississippi State? I believe they have Garrison Brooks, who played at Carolina. You're familiar with him. How much do you know about them?
You know, that's all I know. Just to be honest with you, I'll start digging into Mississippi State, you know, today and throughout this week. But you know, the focus has been on, you know, Detroit Mercy. You know, we just wrapped that up with a film session, but, you know, now looking forward, it's about figuring out who Mississippi State is, what their identity is. You know, I have heard that they play really hard, you know, on both ends of the floor, and, you know, they got some talent, and it is a step up in competition, but at the end of the day, we just got to be us, and it'll take care of the game.
Malik, how comfortable do you feel right now, you know, physically and in terms of, you know, what, you know, your flow into the defense and offense right now, just coming back from all the injuries?
I'm feeling good, you know, not as comfortable as I would hope and as I would want to be, you know, just in terms of the feel for the game, the flow of the game, and, you know, being able to do the job constantly and, you know, consistently. But, you know, I feel good. I feel like my play is getting better every game. You know, I feel like I had a really bad game versus Furman. I feel like I let the team down and, you know, I was a big part of that loss and, you know, kind of reason that we lost. So I'm just trying to get back to doing all the little things for us, you know, being back to just getting back to that play hard guy and, you know, do the job on defense and just let the offense come, whatever that may be.
Is it more because of just a transition to all these different philosophies for you that, you know, I guess on the one hand, you know, you're trying to get your legs back under you in one sense, but also at the same time, you're trying to get used to all these new changes?
Yeah, you know, it's really been since, you know, February of 2020 that I really got to play. So, you know, coming back last February of 2021, I was all right, but I wasn't myself at all, just due to injuries and, you know, not being fully cleared. I was clear, but, you know, I wasn't fully healthy, having to get that last surgery on my ankle. So, you know, this is my first time really playing in close to 2 years, so it's just about getting that feel again. And, you know, with Coach McManus coming in and, you know, bringing in a new system on offense, it wasn't that same way that I've been playing, you know, for 3 years. So, you know, just to switch that up on top of me not playing the game for, you know, close to 2 years, it just makes things different and, you know, makes an adjustment for me.
You mentioned how you didn't feel as comfortable as you would hope from a physical standpoint. Do you believe that's impacted you and your game from a mental standpoint because of it?
Yeah, and no, it's a lot more that people would see, but it is difficult just not being back to myself or where I feel like I could be, you know. But it's a challenge, and, you know, I've accepted it, and, you know, I'm working to get better and be the best that I can be. But, you know, it is difficult mentally just hoping and wishing that I could be back to that old guy, but now just trying to find ways that I can impact the game the same way, you know, with what I got now.
How do you feel different? How do you feel unlike the guy you were before?
You know, first is just that pop, that same pop, that same, you know, mindset going into the game. And, you know, in previous years, I've really had, you know, that option at the end of the year, like, you know, I could come back, you know, I still have time and room for growth, but, you know, looking into this year, it's over with. Come April, you know, whenever this thing is all said and done, I don't got that opportunity to come back and play again. So it's just about really trying to give it my all right now and, you know, trying to keep me mentally into it so that I can give it my all.
Do you trust your body? Are you at the point where you can go and do everything, or do you still have a little bit of, I don't know, hesitation about the foot?
No, I wouldn't say I have hesitation. I think if anything, it's more like, it's not mental, but it might just be like physical, like where I feel like I can't do something and, you know, or I just might not do it, but it's not like something mentally holding me back where I don't say that I can't do it, you know.
Is that still pain? Do you deal with pain when you're playing?
No, I don't deal with any pain. You know, I get sore after, but, you know, we all get a little sore, but no pain.
Thanks, Malik.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. So there's Malik answering some questions. A lot of people asking about if the leg or the foot is hindering him in any way. It sounded like It is. I don't know else to say it, right? I mean, it's kind of what he said. It's not a mental block. It's not like, you know, it's fine. I've heard that with some guys who have like a knee operation, you know, that the doctors tell them it is as strong as it's ever been. It's maybe stronger than it was before you hurt it. But until they make a play where they, you know, somebody, there's a collision and they fall to the floor or something and they get up and it's fine, they still are not quite sure. They just, there's always a little hesitancy. But I think that, you know, that in this case, it sounds like there may still be some lasting ramifications. Take our top of the hour ID, and then we'll go hear from Coach Pegues here on ESPN.
Room watching film, but how do you let the guys enjoy it with knowing that there's two games that you have to play and you want to win?
Well, I'm glad Malik said that because that's exactly what it is. It's a business trip. It's not a vacation. I know the weather will be nice. Water will be blue, palm trees, the whole nine. But hopefully our guys aren't going down there with that in mind. If we can manage to enjoy the trip a little bit in the midst of preparing for a very good Mississippi State team, then I'm good with that. But that obviously can't distract us from going down there and doing what we're supposed to do, which is to try to beat Mississippi State on Thursday night.
How much can winning two games down there change the arc of your season?
Yeah, I think it can change it dramatically. I think that, you know, it's a journey, right? It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. This team hasn't been together for even a year, let alone 2 years, like some of the other teams that we've already faced and we will face. And so going down there to the Bahamas and beating – winning two games against two really good teams, obviously every team is a good team, would be huge for this team in terms of building camaraderie and trust. And you know, I think guys would be really excited about the fact that, like, hey, we beat two really good teams. We can beat anybody.
Mike, are you a believer in the idea? You talk about not having been together a lot. Are you a believer in the idea that getting away is good from that standpoint, just in terms of the bonding situation?
Yeah, it's funny you said that because my dad and my uncle were in town. And as great of a place as the Yum Center is, it is phenomenal. You love playing in there, not only aesthetically because we have the best arena in all of college basketball, but we have great fans. But for a new team that hasn't been out there to be playing in front of that crowd without their head coach, with the fans kind of sitting on their hands a little bit at times and being unsure as to what our group is about, I'm sure it provided an extra sense of anxiety that hopefully we don't have to deal with on the road because now it's just us. So I'm looking forward to getting out and getting away and getting on the road and coming together and bonding and learning a lot more about each other.
I guess all things considered, is this kind of what you all could be expected for the change in philosophy, like you said, all these different faces and that sort of thing? That, I mean, you're 3-1, but it was always going to be kind of a, I guess, growing pains or work in progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot that has transpired since June. You know, a lot of new faces, coaching staff as well, guys moving up into different roles, 8 newcomers. Jalen Withers played the 5 all last year. Now he's playing the 4. New leadership with Jared West, who's a big voice and somebody we want to hear from, but now he has to find a way to weave his leadership, you know, throughout the locker room. And Malik is probably the one constant, you know, Sam Williamson. But it's a lot of new things going on, you know, obviously coach not being around these last couple of weeks. So it's been a challenge. You know, I think I said in a previous press conference, you know, we've all identified that, but there's no excuse. You know, we have a good enough team to win some games, to win the games that are ahead of us. And that's the expectation.
Mike, you talked a little bit about Jalen just now. Mm-hmm. Do you have to do anything to maybe force him to get a little bit? You know, you kind of talked about it, you know, after last game, he kind of gets lost on the perimeter a little bit being in that new position. Do you guys have to do anything to kind of force him to kind of get in the action?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, you know, we try not to run a ton of set plays. We want to play fast. We want to flow. We don't want to get the ball to stop moving as much as it does, even though we still aren't trying to call set plays. But to your point, I think that Jalen has to get himself more involved by running the floor in transition and by going to the offensive glass. How can we help him? I think that we can, you know, we have a few wrinkles that we probably need to think more about utilizing in order to get him in the lane more. The fact that he's only shot two free throws to this point is ridiculous. He's got to get to the basket. He's got to get in the lane. He has to exert his will on the game a lot more than he did on Saturday.
You had mentioned before that you guys are still kind of struggling to find your identity on the defensive end. What do you think is the main thing or things that are kind of holding you guys back from finding what your identity on defense is?
I think consistency. I think that there were spurts throughout the game where we proved that we could guard, that we proved that we could keep the ball in front and that we could scramble and we can get matched up and we could help one another and we could block out and rebound. But unfortunately, that's the exception and not the norm. And it needs to be the norm. And our practices today, tomorrow, and even Wednesday will be reflective of how important that is.
Mike, Malik was saying, he was saying, you know, he doesn't have pain and he doesn't feel like he's mentally held back by his injury, but he was saying he is a different guy coming back. What have you seen from him and kind of how he's adapting to whatever his new reality is?
Yeah, I think that he's dealing with, you know, a reality that you hate to see a kid at his age have to deal with, that he's just not, he just doesn't possess the physical prowess and lateral quickness and leaping ability that he once had because of his injuries. And that is unfortunate. But Malik has more than enough in the tank to still be a hard playing guy that can make pivotal plays for us on both ends of the floor. And I think that he's trying to find that middle ground, even in these early games, trying to figure out how long he can go in a stretch. Generally, we like to play guys no more than about 6-7 minutes at the most. And Malik is trying to find a way to play really hard, you know, and you know, ball screen coverage, post defense, getting around in front and getting off his feet to rebound and play above the rim a little bit. That's a challenge when you've had the injuries that he's had. So he's trying to work through that, and we have to be smart, obviously, with his minutes so that we have him when we need him at the end of games and obviously at the end of the year.
Coach Holland's been around for a while. He was very successful at Pitt. He went to 3 straight Final Fours at UCLA. This might be one of his better teams at Mississippi State. When you think of him and his teams, what is their identity?
Well, I've watched a little bit of Mississippi State to this point. I obviously watched their game against Detroit in preparation for Detroit. I've seen a little bit of them in other games as well. My focus over the weekend was our team, trying to make sure that we got a lot better. But I know that he's always had talented teams. He's a phenomenal recruiter. And I know that those guys always play hard. And this Mississippi State team is no different. They play extremely hard. They are obviously well coached by a veteran who's done it for years. And, you know, I don't know that we're going to win the coaching battle. You know, he's done this a lot longer than me. He's got a much better feel for it. But, you know, it's not a coaching game. It's the players decide the game. And I'll try to not to get in the way of our guys, you know, winning the game. You know, our staff will do the best job that we can to be prepared and to give our guys all of the answers. And then at the end of the day, they have to go out there and execute, which is a good thing for me because I would lose that coaching battle.
How are they using Brooks?
I think similarly to how he played him at North Carolina. You know, he's physically imposing, although not the tallest guy, but he is extremely strong and well-built, and he throws his body around. He knows how to use his body, and he's extremely skilled. You know, he can make tough turnaround jump shots, even though, you know, you have a hand in his face. And he's, you know, he's welcome to as many as of those as he likes, as long as we contest it. I'd much rather have him shooting those than ducking us in and getting the offensive rebound putbacks and scoring 2 feet from the basket. So, but he's a force, but they have a force at almost every position. Obviously, Molinar is a pro. He's unbelievable. He's like a baby Russell Westbrook with a better jump shot. No offense to Russell Westbrook. You know, Matthews is a hard-playing dude. Shaq Moore, we know from NC State. You know, Jeffries is a phenomenal scoring talent. They got a lot of good players. But that being said, we can win that game if we play to our standard. And we didn't do that on Saturday. And so that's what we have to find a way to do starting the day in practice.
Matt was limited on Saturdays, and you have directions, as you know.
Matt is much better. Much, much better. He saw the doc today. They ran a test on him to make sure that his blood work is good, that his heart is good, his mind is good. You know, he's in the right place. I think there was an issue where he just didn't eat. He says he's not a big eater, and I told him I wish I had that problem. You know? But he didn't eat very much, you know, that morning, and that obviously inhibited him from being able to play the game the way he normally plays it because he's a hard-playing kid.
Mike, we talked to Reese Gaines last week. I was wondering from your guys' perspective, what value maybe does a guy like that have, having been around professional basketball, having been around that Spurs organization, just as a sort of as a mentor for some of your guys, a guy they can go to?
Yeah, Reese has been great. You know, just seeing him in practice has been good for me because he's so positive. He encourages, you know, everybody from the coaches to the players to keep doing a great job. He's also not like crossing that line up like, hey, I played in the league, or hey, I was a great player here, this is what you should do. You know, he's total opposite of that. Like he's just, you know, he's made our program better just with his presence alone. He's a phenomenal guy. We're lucky to have him around.
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. That is Coach Pegues talking about the trip to the Bahamas and his thoughts on that. My thoughts on this are first of all, he's an incredibly modest guy. I mean, he is not a guy that has taken this and said, "Oh man, you know, I'm the sheriff now." And he's, you know, he's very, very level-headed about it. Doesn't mean he's not willing to get on guys. I mean, he's definitely got on guys in practice, and I've heard him, you know, get on guys in the game a little bit. But he's also, like I said, whether you like it or not, I said it's a fine line, but I said this on the air, and I don't know if I got back to him or not, but I said, if you're going to be the head coach, you got to be the head coach. You got to make a decision. I thought, I watched one game where I thought he got talked out of a timeout, and they just played without the timeout, and then they didn't score, and I thought that was not good. You know, whether, if you believe you need to be a timeout here, you got to call the timeout. You know, that's, sometimes I would call timeout just because I wanted to clear my own head. All right, well, you know, not just for that one possession, because the argument was, well, we know what offense we're running right now. We don't need a timeout. But he had plenty of timeouts left. And, you know, you're not just talking about that one possession. You're talking about other things. You want to get – and especially as this team is trying to learn, it's not so bad to use as a reinforcement to do that. So I think he's gotten more comfortable. I said to him, I thought he looked more comfortable on the bench in this last game. You know, they're coming down the stretch. He's only got two more games to do it. Hopefully he's enjoyed it a little bit. He made me laugh at the last game when, you know, everybody asks the same thing, you know, which is – going to the Bahamas, I mean, in the winter, and you know, what a beautiful place. We've been there a number of times, and what, you know, you're going to find some time to enjoy it. And he said to, I think he said to Paul and I have no plans to enjoy anything about it. It's like, wow, that's dialed in. He said, I understand the players may have a little bit of time, and that's fine, and they should, but not me. I'm going to be locked in my room just trying to get us as prepared, and with good reason. You know, he's going to be evaluated on the six games, and I still stand by the fact that, you know, if they come out of these six games at 5-1, that would be spectacular. 4-2 would be, you know, kind of a realistic success, a realistic level of success given everything that's going on. So, you know, they're 3-1 right now. So if they go down there and split, they're 4-2, which, you know, doesn't kill you, as then Chris comes back and then they get to the meat of the season. If they have 5-1 and they win both games down there, that would be spectacular. If they lose them both, it's going to be disappointing. They'll be 3-3, and you can point to, you know, the Furman game and say, well, they'd gotten that, they would have guaranteed that they got at least four wins here. So they let that one get away. So, you know, but it's not going to be a crisis regardless. You know, so that's the reality of it. And I think he's done, Mike Davis, you know, said, and I know he's being polite, but he said he went out of his way to tell him, and he doesn't know Pegues at all. He said, I just want to tell you, I think given the circumstances, you've been doing an extraordinary job. And so, you know, that's when you hear for a guy who's been a head coach, it's hard to believe Mike Davis has been a head coach for like 23 years. I mean, that's unbelievable. In his
fourth school. So, you know, I'm sure he appreciated hearing that. But that's got to be the mindset. You know, it's a long season. You take these trips. Yeah, the fans enjoy themselves, but you can't expect the players not to go down and enjoy it a little bit. My goodness, it's one of the most beautiful places in the world to go down there and say, no, we're not enjoying anything. That seems kind of stupid. But you do have to have the little switch that says, you know, that you're going to know when it's time to work and when it's not. I mean, I remember we went down and it wasn't nearly the level. This is going back 20-some-odd years, but nobody was really going to the Bahamas. They had a little event. It was called the Goombay Paradise Island Classic. I'll never forget that. And it was non-Division I schools. It was an 8-team event. You played 3 games, and it was this. They had only one gym down there, and it was sort of a glorified high school gym. And, you know, since the games were going all day, there really was no place to practice. So, I mean, we set up a practice. We found a parking lot. And we practiced in the parking lot. We didn't go hard. I wasn't about to get guys hurt. But, you know, I said to this long, and we won all 3 games down there. We won the – they gave us – it was – I'll never forget. Nick probably remember. Do you remember, Nick? You were really little, but you went on that trip. Do you remember the trophy? It was a giant conch shell.
Oh, I remember that. That was awesome. Yeah, it was very cool.
Cool trophy. It was very nice. It was very fun. So the kids enjoyed themselves, but they were very – you know, when it was time to go to work, they got down to work. Even when we were out in the parking lot going through, you know, walkthroughs there, they weren't like, this is stupid. They were like, all we needed was space, and, you know, we got it done, and everybody – and then, you know, we didn't charter, so we – after the last game, we stayed an extra night so they could have some – they had some fun. I told them, by the way, because I asked Dre Davis this on the air. He's a nice kid. God bless him. He took it in the spirit I meant it. You know, he's got the dreadlocks, he's got the braids, and I said, he's got them all, you know, all over. And I said, before we get on the air, I said, how long did it take you to do that? And he just laughed, and he said, well, like, you know, 6 or 7 hours. I said, okay, I guess when we played in the Bahamas, I told them if we won the tournament, I would get my hair braided. And I went.
I remember that.
And I went, and it took them like an hour and a half to do one braid. So I came back with one braid. I had one braid. I wasn't going to spend the
you
whole
had a couple.
Of the day.
No, I thought you
no,
had,
they
I thought
did
had,
one.
I thought you had a couple.
No, maybe two, where the part was. And maybe they did one on each side of the part. That might be right. I don't know. But, yeah, they certainly couldn't do my whole head. I'd had to stay another night. So, anyway, but it was fun. And the point was, maybe it was fun because you won. You know, if you win anything, you're going to have fun. But I also think it was just because they had a real good mindset about it. And I think these kids may, and hopefully will do the same. They'll have the same mindset. So, we're going to take a short break here, and then we're going to come back because
we have a little stoop sound. We can
stoop sound, yay!
Yeah. By the way, both those pressers presented by U of L Health make the impossible possible. That's the power of you.
Power of you.
Both Satterfield and Coach Pegues and Malik
and
Williams
Pegues. And Malik. All right, we'll come back. Stay with us here on ESPN 680 1057.
Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases, tuition free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
CardNation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.